All right. Hello, everybody. I am Adam Muffich with National Comfort Institute, and I'm with Dominic Guarino from NCI, Leilani and Brian Orr from HVAC School, and GRIT. So this morning, we wanted to talk a little bit about what is GRIT and kind of the parallels between what we do at NCI and the GRIT Foundation. So,
And HVAC School, right?
HVAC School, absolutely. Yeah, so what is GRIT? I know that's like a big...
Everybody talk about themselves a little bit or introduce themselves?
Intros. Sure, I'll introduce myself. I'm Brian, and I do the whole HVAC School thing. I'm a contractor locally over the last, I guess, 8-9 years. We've published a lot of stuff online. I did a lot of classes within our own company, and that community has grown, which has been fun. And along with that, our business has grown. So as that's grown and as I've sort of continued to see people coming into the trades who need support, but who are also very excited both to learn but also to teach, because that's along my journey of really learned most when I'm teaching or when I'm preparing to teach something. Or sometimes when I learn something new, that's when I most just want to share it with somebody, that excitement of whatever. And I see that need in the trades for tradespeople to have that outlet, but also for young people, especially to get brought into the trades and to be connected in their local communities with tradespeople who are passionate about teaching. And so GRIT Foundation is kind of comes out of that. And I'll let Leilani introduce herself and talk a little bit more about specifically what we're doing.
I'm Leilani Orr, and I'm Brian's wife. So I've been supporting the trades most of my existence because we met pretty young. So, just in the last few months, we launched GRIT Foundation, which is a nonprofit foundation. Right now, we're pushing to connect with partners throughout the country and encourage them to invite young people from their community to these day camps. We call them GRIT day camps, where our head of training, Ty Branneman, draws up a curriculum of a lot of immersive hands-on activities for the kids to really see what the skilled trades are about and to make them curious, and hope that the contractors then build that reputation within their community to be people that are investing in the future and are a good place also for the kids to maybe get a job outside, you know, when they're done with high school and want to pick up a trade. So we're really excited about this, to make the trades more accessible to underserved communities and to make them dashingly desirable.
Dashingly desirable.
There you go. Wow. Okay. I didn't hear that one yet. We're trying new messaging.
Nice.
Great. I'm Dominic Guarino, CEO of National Comfort Institute. So what you guys are doing is amazing, by the way, from HVAC School and GRIT. It's just so needed. And, you know, we tend to work more with the people who are already in the industry that want to take things to the next level. And that's kind of what NCI was created for well over 30 years ago now. So these kinds of things are phenomenal for helping to continue the mission, get the word out. We need to raise the bar in this industry for sure. And so it's just great that these organizations between GRIT and HVAC School and CI is kind of like from start all the way to advanced. And so I think this is just a wonderful fit.
Yeah. So is this is GRIT mainly geared towards like high school students, like kind of going after the younger?
Well, we're starting in the area that I think there's a huge need. But there's so my long-term vision is a little bit broader than that. Right now, we're starting with the camps because it's something that we can do very quickly, and we can get a lot of excitement, and a lot of people understand it. A lot of people are familiar with the article in the Wall Street Journal about the tool belt generation and how a lot of kids are considering skilled trades or really anything that they can do with their hands, so they don't have to be trapped behind a desk for most of their career. I have a broader kind of interest in using the trades as a means to connect communities. That's always something I'm really excited about. Even sort of the political paradigm that we find ourselves in, where there's so much division. It's amazing how people, when they get together and they're working on a problem, a real problem, how a lot of those divisions go away. And I see that time and time again. It's amazing when you're building a building or when you're solving a technical problem, you're not arguing about what political party you're part of. And I see that especially around education. Education around the trades is unique in that you're usually learning something that you're going to go and directly apply. In fact, when you see, you know, guys sitting in the class, you know, in the classes that aren't good, so the non-NCI classes, where they're just reading a PowerPoint and they're just leaning back and everybody's eyes are glazed over, is because tradespeople instinctively understand what is application-based and what is really just learning things for just, you know, this ambiguous, you know, kind of disembodied reason. So within GRIT, what we really want to do is connect people who want to learn with people who are passionate about what they do. And that kind of across everything, the political boundaries, racial boundaries, gender boundaries, there's a real opportunity for people to invest in one another, which then makes both parties better. And we see that all the time. We saw that in the first GRIT camp that we did with our employees. The kids had an amazing time, and that was great. But the thing that I knew would happen is that our team members had probably the best day they ever had at work.
It reignited their their joy of learning and being in the trades, I think.
And that's the thing that's hard to explain, like I'm doing it right now. But when we talk about GRIT, we're focusing on the kids and bringing people into the trades because that's something that people can understand quickly. But the bigger effect is going to be tradespeople who are now activated in their communities and know how to talk about what they do and know how to get people excited about the trades. And that's not just about benefiting the trades and the people talk about workforce development a lot. I actually don't care that much about that. I'm not here to create a workforce for corporations to have work for them. I'm excited about individual people being activated, having skills, and then ultimately being able to apply their hands to things that make an impact in the world. Because you know there's no better feeling than a good hard day's work solving problems with people that you care about creatively. And when you're doing that, those divisions fall away, those barriers fall away. And so that's the broader kind of heart that I have for it. But absolutely, starting with young people is great because young people are that blank slate. They really don't, you know, it's kind of a new ground for them, and it's always fun.
That's great. Yeah, I think what you guys are doing, I know building a workforce isn't your primary objective, but I believe that this industry needs that because just some Department of Labor statistics, something like within the next 3 or 4 years now, because I remember the studies were done 5 years ago, or yeah, 2 or 3 years ago, but it said something like 1 in 2 technicians won't be there
right.
if we continue at the rate where we are. So there'll be just this huge sucking sound of people missing industry with people
like
retiring.
Yeah. that was a Ross Perot quote there. Yeah, good one. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, just we need to bring people into the trades. And again, not like you said, not to, you know, help build up big corporations, that kind of thing, but just your average contractor, your, you know, small business needs people. And right now, one of the biggest things that's happening I see around the country is constant poaching.
Yeah.
So they just move somewhere for 15 cents more an hour, and then they move to another place. And it's just not a great dynamic.
What I see all the time is that happens in absence of meaning and purpose. So when people feel a lot of meaning and purpose in their work, then they're not just chasing that 50 cents, right? Mm-hmm. But the other side of that equation is that people should be able to make really good money and not have to chase the 50 cents, right?
Absolutely.
It's both. It's both sides of the equation. And that's why I kind of balance it, right? So when I say I'm not here to build a workforce, that doesn't mean that I don't care about that problem. I certainly do. I own and run a decent-sized business, so like I get that. But what I find is that when we get wrong-headed about the problem and we think about it from this strategic, almost political viewpoint of like, well, we need more people in the trades. It's like, yeah, but what do you do about it, right?
Right.
What you do about it is you get people engaged. You give them meaning. You give them purpose. You give them something that they can really care about. And there's nothing more powerful than the ability to share what you've learned. And we've all experienced that, right? It doesn't matter if you're an introvert, extrovert, if you're an installer, a service tech. It doesn't matter. Being able to really share what you know with somebody who's excited to learn it, that's a powerful thing. And that's something you don't want to leave. That's something when you've trained a group of people, it's really hard to leave those people behind, right? Okay. And that's a really healthy dynamic within organizations. It's when everybody's just chasing the dollar and the dollar becomes the thing. I mean, I heard the phrase the other day, which I thought was really kind of pertinent to the moment that we're in today, is the moment that a measure becomes the goal, it ceases to be a measure, right? The idea that you can't change what you don't measure is true, right? That is true. A measure is a signpost. It tells you where you stand. But that's not what you're doing. It's not what you're there for. And that's what's happened with money and a lot of other things. It becomes this like, well, what are your KPIs? Why do you care about your KPIs? Ultimately, you care about it because you want to do a really good job for your clients, because you care about the organization you work for. You care about humans. And so that's where we talk about things like workforce development. And it becomes this sort of disembodied high-level concept rather than being about people, humans, that you actually care about.
And then being companies that reward that with pay compensation.
Absolutely, yeah. People should make amazingly good money in the trades. Right. That's good for all of us, right? For rank and file technicians, installers, to make better money. That's huge. And they should be able to do that through technical competency, not just through pushing metrics. Not that there's anything wrong with the metrics, but the metrics are in service of, not the other way around.
So I know for a good period of time, trades were kind of frowned upon, right? Like in HVAC, we were almost like looked down on, like we were appliance repair people, and that's all we were. And I know when I went through high school, we had like auto shop and all these different type of classes that we could take, but that was like the tail end of it. And then it was like they pushed everyone to go through college, and like people like me, I like moving around, I like doing things. Do you guys have anything to say about, you know, the kind of the state of where we're at as an industry and like kind of the overall perception of HVAC people?
I feel like in the last few years there's been actually a really positive change in people's perspective. That stigma is starting to get broken into a little bit. And at Grit Foundation, that's absolutely another thing that we're talking to the parents and the grandparents and saying, hey, your kids want to have skills. It's actually very natural for us to want to be able to know how to do something and to feel that independence and capability. And multiple people I talked to here at AHR already, parents have come up and said, my son really wants to go into HVAC. And I kind of downed it at first, she said, but now that I think about it, you know, maybe this is what he should do. And so she's going to encourage him in that. And she was so excited to find HVAC school. And I said, there's so many great resources. Connect with this community. HVAC school has such a large community of men and women that can guide this young man into his next phase of working. But yeah, I think we should be having more conversations with our families, with our parents and grandparents and multiple generations of saying, hey, this is a really cool thing to be in and a good, very respectable work.
Yeah, I've seen a shift for sure. It's not always, from my perspective, for the right reason. You know, there's, again, that was another Wall Street Journal story about the new millionaire class, our plumbers and HVAC contractors, right? And that's good. Like I'm happy about that, but there is a misconception because it becomes about home services and push selling and a lot of things that, you know, I get a little nervous about. But when you talk to regular people, and it doesn't matter if they're college educated, PhDs, it doesn't matter. Regular people really, really value the skilled trades nowadays much more than they did before. And I think of M. Ryan Gorman, who is the CEO of Coldwell Banker, who I became friends with. He just listened to the podcast. A guy of significant influence who went to Ivy League school and all that. And he, you know, said to me in a conversation that we were having about something around his house, he's like, man, I really wish that I had started off actually learning a trade skill, like authentically had that feeling. And I hear that over and over again, people who are like, man, I wish that I had kind of followed the advice my dad gave me when I was 16, which was learn to do something with your hands. And you see that when you talk to people in candid conversations, like cocktail hour, how many people across this country really feel that gap now. Mm-hmm. And I think there was prior generations where that was just baked in. Everybody just knew how to do things with their hands. We talked to a lot of folks who talk about the prior generation of engineers usually came out of the military or came out of somewhere where they were actually doing, and then they went to college to gain the knowledge in terms of the theoretical knowledge to be able to design things and all that. That was how prior generations even looked at school. The hands-on was just a given, whereas now that paradigm has flipped, where now the hands-on is not a given, and that is almost the more advanced piece. And so, I don't see the resistance or the friction that I once saw among people who traditionally would have kind of poo-pooed the trades.
Yeah, I think they're desiring that human connection. There's been a little bit with technology, which I'm all for, utilizing that for everyone's advantage. But that human connection is missing in service and in some of the tangible ways that we function. So I think that's people want that back. They want.
COVID also totally accelerated that. Like, true. People got trapped in their houses, and the ones who were still out working were people who knew how to do things with their hands. And everybody else was like, well, I guess I'm working from home now, and just like, stuck. And so I think a lot of people through that accelerated it, and they realized, man, I wish I had something I could do.
Yep. Well, it's good to see more role models in our industry for the young kids. Like, you went to trade schools, right? I went to trade schools in the 70s. And that's kind of where I learned all the mechanical stuff and so forth, and was able to take that knowledge, and I didn't even have a high school diploma in the United States. I actually lived in Europe and took that here, came here when I was 19, but essentially did things that I worked in an engineering lab in R&D, not even a U.S. high school diploma, and then became chief editor of Contracting Business Magazine. So I think showing young people coming in saying, this can be you. You can do whatever you want. You don't have to start with college. You could start somewhere and move your way up. And for a while, I think in the 90s and even the early 2000s, you got to go to college, because if you don't have that piece of paper, you're going to hit that ceiling.
Right.
And I think that's changing. In fact, I started seeing some commercials on TV about that, like the ceiling is broken, you don't have to have the piece of paper.
Yeah, and so you're seeing that change and that shift of that tone around it.
Yeah, so that's really heartening. Mm. Sure.
Nice. I was wondering, too, the whole Grit Foundation and how it started. I know that you guys have a unique training thing going on at Kalos, right? And just going to the symposium and seeing a lot of your employees, you have a lot of really young employees.
Yeah.
Was this whole idea and kind of the way you're going about doing this based around what you've learned and developed? How did that come about?
Yeah, the first thing that I think is really important to know about me and how ideas come about is that they come about, I point in a direction, and then I have this amazing group of people who then figure out all the details. So a lot of times people ask me about the detailed aspects of the things I see or the things I put in place, and the reality is that the idea is the easy part. It's all the execution, and the team really executes, so I can't take credit for that at all. But the basic idea is that. I mean, it's like, and that develops over time. You start to, you can viscerally feel things shifting, and that's where this came from. It's like there was a time where this wouldn't have probably worked, but now you feel this gap. People are like, man, this is amazing. Kids really want to get into the trades. And then there's this gap. Mm-hmm. And again, once they're actually working for a contractor, well, then you have NCI. Then you have, once you're already kind of dedicated to the trades, well, then you start, listening to the HVAC school podcast. Then you do this, then you do that. But this gap between people who, they really need to figure out how to make money doing this. They can't just go to a trade school for the next 2 to 4 years and just, they just can't. A lot of people are not in that position anymore. And I think a lot of kids feel that way. It's like, why don't I, I want to go to the trades, but the reason why I want to go to the trades is because I don't want to keep having to go to school. I don't really like school. I want to do things hands-on. And so there's this challenge that exists. And so I see a lot of gaps. I see contractors who really need to have apprenticeship programs in place, things like internships, things like ride-alongs, all these things. And there's currently these barriers in place. So when I first started the podcast, I've told you this before, when I first started the podcast, people would say, oh, man, you can't do that. customers are going to hurt themselves, they're going to listen to the podcast, and they're going to injure themselves trying to do it themselves. And also, you can't learn HVAC from a podcast. And both of those things are potentially true, but everything is a cost-benefit analysis, right? Like, of course you can't learn how to do HVAC from a podcast. That's ridiculous. You have to do it hands-on. But that doesn't mean that having a podcast that teaches HVAC isn't still valuable, a valuable part of the ecosystem. And recognizing that you don't have to own the whole thing. Just do your piece really well. And that's where I see this kind of problem existing right now, where there are a lot of people who are interested in it, but they're afraid. You can't give a 12-year-old kid a torch and ask him to start brazing. Yeah, you can. My 6-year-old was doing it at our camp. And again, carefully, thoughtfully, with an adult right there. But I mean, you know, come on. Like, yes, you can. And once a kid has that experience of melting metal with fire and seeing how cool that is, and yeah, safety, all that too. But it isn't, you know, when people talk, I like how Micro talks about, you know, safety third. It's like, safety is very important, but the point isn't safety, right? Like, and in the same way that money is very important to a business, but the point isn't money, right? What is the point here? The point is being able to do things with your hands, being able to solve problems. And when kids get a taste of that, it's really, really powerful. And so what I'm seeing and what we're trying to connect the dots on is, how do you get from somebody who's like, yeah, trades sound cool, to actually working in the trades? That's a big gap, and that's something that I think we should use tradespeople to help lift up everybody in their community to make those connections.
I wanted to mention this real quick because he asked, like, what spurred us on to start.
Are you saying I didn't answer the question?
Well, you forgot one very, very, very good.
Like a politician. They ask a question, and I just talk about what I want to talk about.
Yeah. So if you remember, a year ago at AHR in Chicago, you were inspired. Do you want to tell that?
Oh yeah, I mean that was really the inspiration, honestly. And because I came back from AHR a little overwhelmed. It's always an exhausting experience. But the one thing that I had, you know how you can feel your energy kind of draining just when you're at these events, and you love talking to people, but it just starts to drop on you. But as soon as I was with these high schoolers and we were walking the floor in Chicago, these are Chicago public school high school students. They started off, you know, quiet, introverted, looking at their phones. And 10 minutes in, they're starting to look up, you know, kind of a little nervously. 30 minutes in, they're talking to each other and talking to me. And by the end, they're like, wow, let me see that. This is awesome. You have a YouTube channel.
And you were bringing them to all the booths.
We were walking booths. We were just talking about the stuff that we were seeing. And you watch them go from eyes down to eyes up. And that's the best way that I can explain a lot of what – it gives me goosebumps to think about that because I remember when that happened. I was just talking about how I came to this event in 99. I think it was 99 as a student. And that idea of like, whoa – like, this is not what I expected. This is not what I thought it was. And I think we can do that for a lot of people. And it's the same for the technician who's been out there and getting beat down and starting to look for that next 50 cents. You can get them to bring their eyes up, too. And where are their eyes going? Their eyes are going to that kid who simultaneously you're both looking at each other like, no, this is actually kind of cool, isn't it? Right? Isn't this cool? Yeah, it is cool. And there's that interchange of energy that you get when you're bringing somebody up. And so, like, man, that's lightning in a bottle. And it's not something that, because a lot of people are like, well, yeah, you're good at talking. It's like, no, you see it with anybody. We saw it with our technicians. Anybody who all of a sudden is like, no, actually, I actually know how to do stuff. Like, I can share that with somebody. It's a really powerful thing.
No, I think we're also seeing education in our industry kind of going down two tracks. You know, one is the traditional vocational school, but probably in the past 10, 12 years, we started seeing these, some people call it a build-a-tech program, fast-track technician training that basically gets them to where they could start doing basic maintenance. And, you know, some safety stuff, of course, they got to get that. And I'm just seeing more of those popping up, and I think this industry needs that because, like you said, not everybody wants to go to 2 years of trade school. Mm-hmm. But if you can, you know, get them out in 6 weeks, 8 weeks, put them in a truck, apprentice them, you know, that sort of thing, I think it's a great path for people to come into our industry, and it removes that barrier of the trade school. And again, I have nothing against trade schools. I spent a lot of years in trade schools myself. But What do you guys think? Do you see that happening more?
Yeah, I do. But I want to make a distinction because there are two reasons why that's happening. Mm-hmm. One is that people see that for tradespeople, they need to get working quicker, and they're really bored by the traditional educational paradigm. Mm-hmm. That's a good reason, right? And I think it's very effective. The first job I had in education when I was 20 years old was basically doing that internally for a contractor, and it was very effective and I think a really good thing. But then there's the other reason, which is that there's a lot of big companies who are like, well, I can't find any techs, so... let's just give people some keys and some safety training and say, have at it, right? And there's a difference between grassroots and AstroTurf. AstroTurf is top-down, people throwing money at a problem and trying to make it look good. It's marketing, right? And then there's grassroots, which are people who really recognize and understand the problem and passionately bring up tradespeople as fast as you possibly can. Mm-hmm. That's great. And anyone who tries to gatekeep and say, you've only been doing this a year, who cares how long you've been doing it? Are you doing a good job? Do you know what you're doing? Are you taking care of your clients?
And do you care about it?
More than anything, that's actually a really good point. More than anything, do you really care? Because the reality is the work I did when I was 3 years in wasn't that great. But also I wasn't charging that much for it, you know, and like it was just like that's sort of how that goes. We all have this path that we follow. But if you care, if you really care about the work, you really care about your clients, then it's going to be great. And so I see both happening simultaneously. And I think it can easily shift. It's just that passionate tradespeople have to be the ones leading the charge on this. Money is great. Money solves a lot of problems, but when you just throw it at a problem...
We have a donation page on Grit Foundation, by the way.
By the way.
Sponsors. Yeah,
there you go. But that is that doesn't actually solve the fundamental issue. The fundamental issue is to your point, getting people working productively and feeling good about the problems they're solving. And this comes down to like a very basic human thing, which is we want to do work that we feel like we can do. Mm-hmm. And when you take somebody and you run them through 2 years of classes and they've already forgotten the things at the beginning and then you throw them and you give them tools the first time, they're like, I don't like this. I don't know how to do this. Whereas if you take somebody and put them in a Build-A-Tech program and you give them a bunch of reps doing maintenance to where they're really good at doing maintenance, they actually do a good maintenance, and you send them out to do maintenance, they feel good about it. To this day, there's nothing I love more than cleaning a condenser to where it goes from like anthills piled in the middle of it and the condenser all dirty to just beautifully clean. Yeah. And that's because early on, that was my focus, just reps doing that, doing a really good job at it. That's a really healthy thing. And I think an actually really good trend. That doesn't mean that trade schools are bad, but it is a challenge that trade schools need to address because people are not, we see it all the time. And a lot of people get frustrated with me when I say this, but there's this gatekeeping thing where they won't even let their students take the EPA until the very end of, say, a 2 or 4 year program because they don't want them to leave. And the challenge that I have to trade schools is, why is that, right? Stop saying it's because, oh, well, they're just short-sighted. No, it's because your course is really boring. Yeah. They're not really learning that much. So you have to have more investment in, again, the Ty Brannaman effect. Nobody leaves a Ty Brannaman class. If Ty Brannaman is your trade school instructor, you're in it and you're learning every day because they're really, really activated and really excited. It's when we take trade school instruction and make the educators basically glorified administrators and you beat them down with all the paperwork they have to do and everything else. Well, now who wants to do that, right? So now you see this, you walk into a trade school across anywhere in any city in America, and you're going to find some really good instructors and some really activated students, and you're going to find a lot who are just beat down. And that's a problem worth solving.
Yeah, and I think with some of our vision at Grit, that there is going to be some ways that contractors can, where the schools and students can actually come to the contractor versus the contractors going into the schools. Uh-huh. It'll be the schools going into the contractor space and being able to give that experience to their students. Yeah.
And that's huge. With the contractor. What you just said is huge. Anybody who sat on a contractor advisory council for traditional trade schools knows what a ruse it is for most of them across the country.
It's a farm team.
It's also about just box checking. I mean, it's like they have to do it in order to show versus what Leilani's saying, which is one of our kind of stated goals. Let's get contractors substantially involved in the process. And let's get students out of the classroom and get them out into the field. The only reason we don't do it is a bunch of excuses. Well, safety, insurance, regulatory, we can solve all that, right? If anything, if you know, regardless of what you think about politics right now, right, the moment that we're in right now proves you can do things. It just takes a little bit of collective will to get things done.
Implementing
and so,
it.
So we can solve these problems. You just have to do it. Yeah. We got to get people hands-on, seeing real situations, real life, and integrate that with the schools, not keep them so separate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. You made me think about a little microcosm of this. A number of years ago, it's probably been 10, 12 years ago, my son's best friend was working at, you know, he did some bug spraying and stuff like that for a while, and then he worked at Costco cutting meat. And so his name's Andy, and I remember seeing them together and saying, Andy, what are you going to do with your life? And he goes, I don't know, you know, I don't have a direction. And so long story short, I said, well, I've got a friend who's a local contractor. I think if you enroll in trade school, he'll hire you and have you work during the day while you go to trade school at night. Well, again, long story short, he did it. He decided to go ahead and do it. He worked for this contractor, one of the better contractors in the Cleveland area, for about a year and a half or so, and actually came to work for NCI, doing kind of inside customer support. From there, he moved on to being like a key mechanical maintenance person at Jacobs Field, you know, the baseball field.
Oh, yeah, cool.
In Cleveland. Yeah. And now he's actually like fairly high up on the maintenance area for Ford. Oh, cool. So here's a kid who had no direction, and it was just kind of cool that he saw something in the trades that attracted him. And, you know, I think there's a lot of those. So what you guys are doing is kind of what I tried to do on steroids. It was just one kid, but let's get lots of kids.
And there's so many stories of people that there was just a person in their life that sort of steered them. You know, they said something, you know, they supported them, and or a parent or a friend of a parent. And so we can be those people that, you know, we can be walking around and encouraging them to sort of to get them to that next step and watch them succeed.
Yeah, just a quick story on that front. Dan Holohan, a lot of people know Dan in the industry. He was at the award show just a couple nights ago, and I didn't expect him to be there. But Dan is somebody who's done that for me, even mid-career. After I had started HVAC school, for absolutely no reason whatsoever, he came on my podcast, he stopped me at AHR multiple times, and I distinctly remember at one point we were just talking, and he said, you know, you're really good at this. You need to just keep doing this. You're really good at it. And it's like that, like, I'll never forget that. And how easy was that for him to do, right? But it's easy, but it's not common, mm-hmm. right? It's easy to give an encouraging word to somebody and to point them in a direction that's going to be useful for them, but it's surprisingly uncommon to take that moment in somebody else's space and just encourage them. And encourage just means to give courage, to share courage with another person. And tradespeople need courage. And we're talking about the ones who are already in the field. They need to be encouraged. You can teach. You can lead. You can develop your soft skills. You can do things that you never thought you were able to do. In a lot of cases, I think tradespeople are beat down because the reason they got into the trades is because people told them they weren't good enough. You can't hack it at college. You're somehow lesser. And to change that paradigm and say, well, now, the world we find ourselves in now, if you know how to do things with your hands, that's crazy valuable. Share it with other people and give that courage now to the next guy up. Say that, hey, you're really good at that. It's amazing. You this is your first time brazing? Wow, that looks really good. You're really good at this. And now that kid's like, man, I am good at this. I can do this. That's what everybody needs. That's what everybody wants.
Awesome.
We've talked about your podcast, and honestly, the only reason why I found you was social media, right? So I have a question actually for all, and I want to finish that off with Dominic, but what are your thoughts on all the content out there, what people are using to learn on social media, YouTube, TikTok, all that, the good and the bad? What is it doing for the trade?
I think it's huge. I mean, you see, I see how quickly it's changed since I started doing this, whatever, nine years ago. It's insane. Like, I was the first podcast who kind of did the technical piece, and now there's so many. At the Tactical Awards, you see all of these Instagrammers, all of these TikTokers who are doing it. And I think it's amazing. There's a lot of people who do this sort of like, well, but a lot of it's not so good. It's like, right. And that is, you know, but what do you do with that? Well, what you do with that is what Jim Bergman did with me. And you say, hey, thanks for posting that. Here's a few little tips on what you did there. I just want to let you know. Mm-hmm. There's a kind way to bring up everybody that's saying like, hey, just have you ever thought about this? Have you ever read this? Bill Spohn does that all the time. Whenever he sends me a document, he's like, hey, you should take a look at this. That means that I just said something stupid. That's his nice way of saying, hey, did you see this? You know, and that's great. I mean, that is the way to do that. And people love that. People respect that. Even if sometimes they react on the face of it, people need that. So I think it's amazing. I think it should continue growing. It always frustrates me when people gatekeep, when they say like, oh, no, you shouldn't be doing it. No, make videos. Talk to people. Teach somebody something. If what you did was wrong, then you need to take that feedback. That's the only problem. Ego's the issue, right? And my brother put it really well. It's like if somebody the one of the best gut checks for ego is if somebody corrects you, are you grateful or do you react negatively? And if you react negatively, that's ego or insecurity. Gratitude is how you should always react with when somebody corrects you or brings up something that you didn't know. And as long as we have that, have at it.
Yeah, and I think there to your point of there being so much information on the internet, sometimes there is a little bit of an overload, mm-hmm. and things get lost in it. But I always like to go back to decipher if something has value or not. Are these people actually doing things, or are they just talking and trying to look cool? You know, and so to just go back to check out what they're actually doing, and if they're creating real valuable things for others, then they have my respect.
And I get what you're saying with gatekeeping, but I feel like there is an overload of information, and some of it's for the wrong reasons. You know, like I just want to get, you know, become an overnight sensation or what have you, and they don't necessarily have the field experience and suddenly they've been in the industry 5 minutes and just ask them, they know everything. Right. But again, you don't want the problem is you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, right?
Right.
So I envision someday there being, and the word curating is not really what I mean, but a way, maybe it's a rating system, mm-hmm. where this content gets, it's kind of like a Wikipedia approach where we self-correct.
Yeah.
So if this content gets corrected and sort of, because it's not for the, you know, the people who've been in the industry for a while, they can, their BS meter goes off really quick, right? But the newbies, the kids, they're, you know,
yes.
the grit type kids, right? They don't know what to believe.
Yeah.
So it could really steer them in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
Now, as far as how much harm that could do, maybe it's not that much harm.
Yeah.
It's they'll probably do something stupid that they saw online and, you know, what's that old saying, hold my beer, watch this,
right.
type of stuff.
Hey, watch this, yeah.
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 But in general, you know, they might learn a valuable lesson, like don't put your hand on the stove. And
yeah.
You put your hand on the stove and get burned, you probably won't do it again.
You learn through error, too.
Well, I want to comment on that specifically, because this is a lesson that I feel like I've had to learn. Most people don't see this side of me. Leilani does and a few others. I get really grouchy about stuff I see on social media. Okay, I do. And I frankly, over the last couple of years, got kind of a bad attitude about some of the Instagrammers and some of the TikTokers and all that kind of stuff. I did. And it's not all for bad reasons. Like, it's similar to kind of what you're saying. It's like, oh my gosh. Like, the way I always explain it is, you see somebody, are they taking a video of what they're working on? Or are they taking a video of what they're working on, right?
Yeah.
And that's always been frustrating to me. It's like, why do you need... I can't even see what you're doing because you're... like, why are you doing that, right? Like, why do you have to
They have a pretty face, you know?
Right, yeah.
That's like
all those
it.
Little likes.
Yeah.
And
right, yeah, right. But I don't get to judge. And what do I want? I want to support people to do good work. I want to support people to be in the trades. And if I ever come across as unsupportive, then I'm the problem, right? I'm the problem. I got to look in the mirror. However, support often looks like tough love, right? And tough love, we know. We can sometimes call things tough love when really it's just being a jerk, right? But tough love is you actually want somebody to win. You actually care about them. And that's the thing I have to keep checking in myself is like, all right, I'm irritated, but do I care about this person in the trade or am I just irritated because I don't like it? right? Mm-hmm. And so that's a balance, right? I mean, that's why I say some problems are hard to fix in the big. Some problems are hard to fix in the macro. You almost have to address the small and then kind of build up from there, which is, again, kind of the difference between grassroots and AstroTurf. I think a system like a Wikipedia for the trades, that sounds awesome, right? I mean, that's been very successful in Wikipedia, where it is group curated and you have to fact check and all that stuff. I think that's a great idea. But also realizing that, like, truthfully, when I came this year, I thought, like, I think HVAC school is kind of getting irrelevant. Like there's all these other people, I don't know, like, and people have just kept coming up to me, and a lot of them are these same people, these Instagrammers, these folks. I'm like, man, it's been really helpful. It's like, people will eventually find what they need. You got to some degree, believe in the hidden hand, that, like, when you put a lot of really good stuff out, when you're a person of value and you're committed to, like you said, doing good, actually doing things that are good and of value, then in the end, that's going to show. And I can't worry too much about this, right? Like, because a lot of it is mostly just that annoys me, right? It's just not my personality. Because there is some benefit to that. Like, there is the cool factor, and it does draw people into the trades. Now, they're going to have to get over that, because the reality is working in an attic slinging flex is not cool. It's very hot. Yeah. It's very uncomfortable, and the lighting is not good for video. You know, so there's that sort of, you know, in a motor room, you can't really shoot much because it's really loud, you know, like, and you got to wear your ear protection, and isn't that annoying? It's hard to make videos. You know, Corey Cruz, bad TXV on TikTok, hashtag.
But if those videos are helping them, like, stay excited about their work, then it has value.
Absolutely.
And I think we all do have different preferences of the things that spur us on or the things we like and don't like. But I think it's just good to keep bringing it back to, are they actually encouraging people, giving people courage to do better work? And are they bringing value? Are they doing good work themselves? Yeah. And if they're doing either one of those, whatever style they take, it's good.
Yeah. Cool. Do they give a crap? Yeah. People who care, people who give a crap, I need to always be willing to stop and invest in that.
Yeah. You know, just to shift gears, Brian, and this is something you said last year that really impacted me and is helping to shape some of the things we're doing at NCI. You know, we're all about advanced training, right? We equip technicians to become like super techs or something like that.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you guys are great.
And not just us. There's plenty of others out there. But the thing was, you know, we are kind of at a track like, So we have training tracks, right?
Right.
That say, okay, you start here and you move up this training ladder, you know, with some of the basic advanced, you know, air diagnostics and so on and so forth. But the thing that impacted me is what you said. Not everybody wants to do everything.
Right.
In other words, you need to let the technician decide where they want to go with it.
Right.
You know, maybe they don't want to be, they're an installer and they don't want to be a service tech.
Right.
Or they don't want to be a commissioning person within the company, but maybe there's someone that is. So we recrafted a little bit of our messaging to say yes, here's a training ladder, but we started kind of creating tracks that are role-based.
Yeah.
So it's like, if you want to go down this and become this, here's the things you need to do. And I think we need to do a little bit more of that in the industry so that we're not shoveling everything onto one person saying, oh, my gosh, how do I do all this?
Yeah.
But more like, okay, where do you want to go? Let's help you get there. And I think you might have also said this is your ultimate goal is to have people even graduate beyond your company.
Yeah.
Like exceed where they are and move to higher things.
Yeah, I'll give you an example of that happened this week. One of our market refrigeration techs who's been with us a long time got an opportunity to go into management for one of the theme parks locally. And, his last day was yesterday. He sent me this really long, nice message about how he doesn't want to leave. He loves it here. He loves the people. But this is just an opportunity that he wants to take. Mm-hmm. And again, those are very different tracks. Like, I cannot provide a work experience that's similar to management at a theme park, right? Like, it just doesn't – it's not the same, right? It's totally different schedule, totally different everything. And so I'm happy for him. You know, like, am I sad that I lose a great team member? Sure, but I don't own him. Right, he needs to do that. That's something he wants to do. He needs to. In fact, it would not benefit either of us if he stayed. The reality is, if he goes and does that, does it a couple years, and then learns some things, and wants to come back and apply that here, that would be amazing. I would love that. And if it doesn't happen, that's also fine, right? And that's the attitude you have to have towards humans. You have to fundamentally have the attitude towards people that you want others to have towards you. I mean, that's the basic golden rule, right? And when it comes to career pathing, or, you know, that's a very kind of workforce development term, career pathing. It's a very buzzword right now. But when it comes to that, like, it is still a human being able to see a path forward that they can see themselves in, right? And sometimes it's just that they don't see possibility in themselves that you see, and so you can work on that. But a lot of times it's just people are bent different ways. You know, like some people just, that's the direction they want to go, so help them get there. Yeah. And a lot of times that is. I have tons of employees who will tell me, literally, I had a resi tech come up to me after a class the other day, and he's like, hey, I think I'm ready to start, like, trying to get my license. I want to start my own company soon. And again, I know the guy, and I know that it's probably not the right time, but what's the right response? Is the right response, nah, man, nah, no way. No, you need to, don't tell me that. No, the response is absolutely. We're gonna help get you on that path if that's what you want to do. Because, right, that's the right way to be. That's the way in the long run that's going to be best for him and best for us.
Yeah, and you're kind of like, well, what skill sets will you need to start your own company? Maybe you need to start working on those. And
Well, and in your company, you were saying in the training ladder, that's such a great idea, is try different things and see which one hits. And you're getting experience of things, even if you don't focus on maybe you go from resi tech to being a salesperson, at least now while you're in sales, that you know what the other techs have to experience a little bit, so you have a better understanding. Right. And
well, it's the same thing. Like people will often say, don't give away stuff for free to homeowners information because they're going to use it against you. It's like, if you tell people the stuff you guys teach, the stuff NCI teaches, if you show people that that's the way to do it, no homeowner's going to do that. No way. No homeowner's going to do things the right way. That's so hard, right? And it's the same thing with things like business skills or all the stuff that it takes to run a business. If one of my employees is like, I'd really like to learn that, awesome. Yeah, for sure. We'll definitely help you do that. Because what's that going to do is make them realize, oh, shoot, like, this is a lot. Because if they really want to do it, then I'm happy to help them. But the vast majority of people really don't want to be business owners. Being a business owner is a whole nother ball of wax. So if I hide that information, I'm just going to make it more likely that they do it. If I'm honest with the information, either A, they're going to be really successful, and that's awesome for them. Great. I'm going to have a competitor in our market who actually does it right. Awesome. Right? Or they're going to say, oh, yeah, right, I actually don't want to do that. I really don't like, you know, looking at P&Ls. That's not that fun. Right? So that's the mindset. I think if we take that, you're going to have better relationships with people. Long term, your business is going to do a lot better. And you're going to get a lot more people interested in the trades because they don't see that ceiling. As soon as you can see the ceiling, people start to hate their jobs. They want to see what that next thing is.
We have to wrap up in a second here, but I just wanted to finish up, Leilani. I wanted to know, where do you see grit? Where do you see it growing to in 5 years? Where do you want it to be?
Oh, wow. Right now, it feels like there is no ceiling with it. And there's been so many different layers and opportunities that I think that are going to, what we create out of it is still a little bit, goodness, I'm not sure. I don't see the end yet, but I believe that I would say in 5 years, there's going to be within the trade schools, I think education is going to be looked at differently on how to train techs for the next starting out. And I really think that we can partner with that trade schools are going to be looking at Grit Foundation for training in a sense. And I feel like across the country, everybody's going to realize people are just going to see the skilled trades as a really great, fulfilling career path.
Awesome. What do you think, Dominic? I know NCI's been on a path for years. You've been at this, you know, what is it, been over 30 years now, and it's been a long journey. Where are we going to be in 5 years?
Probably right here at AHR in the state.
Exactly 5 years.
Will it be Orlando then?
No, I have to do the math.
Yeah, no, yeah.
You know, honestly, well, you know, for me, well, personally and in CI, for me, it's getting to the point it's about legacy and passing the torch to the next generation of NCI leadership. That's really, and I think, you know, what's the old saying? The student should exceed the teacher, type of thing. And I see the team that we have right now, the leadership team, and even folks like yourself, Adam, and others, just taking it to the next level in terms of not just the content of what we do, but how we do it. Of course, you know, I didn't grow up with social media and all that. I mean, I'm adapting, I think, pretty well. But you guys, you know, did grow up with it and are growing in the industry with it. So I just see us getting more involved, more online training. You know, you mentioned COVID. That changed everything for us. Mm-hmm. I mean, we could have gone out of business when COVID hit because they basically shut us down from traveling. You know, let's see, large groups of people that get together in small rooms. Yeah, that's perfect. So we, you know, because of that, it forced us to go online. Yes. It forced us to do a lot of things that were pretty uncomfortable, and luckily we were able to do them very quickly. But we learned from that, and now we're doing much more, as you know, Adam, more online classes. I mean, there's nothing like the in-person class with the hands-on and so forth. But so I see maybe the mix going a little more heavy and there's different definitions of online training, right? You know, from self-directed to live and so forth, but more of a hybrid model.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be a lot of that going
on. Great supplemental resource.
Awesome.
For being.
Well, it's great to be a part of it. And I thank you guys for sitting through, and it's been an excellent conversation. And we'll sign out from AHR Orlando 2025.
Thank you.
Thanks, Adam. Yep.